Lua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef Georgia de Jungle supports KKCR.
Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, specializing in professional-grade Pittsburgh paints and paint sundries, premium pet food, and organic livestock feed, propane exchange and filling, too. Located just past the Shell station on Kolo Road in Kilauea, Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5:30, and Saturday from 8 to 1. Locally owned, Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, 828-6655. The Kekau Foundation, license holder for KKCR Kauai Community Radio, will hold its quarterly business meeting Wednesday, April 29th at 6 p.m. at All Saints Church in Kapa'a. All interested parties are invited to attend. For more information, call Steve at 652-3706.
El Pastor Tacos supports KKCR, across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. El Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos and burritos in the El Pastor style. Open every day from 11 to 4, El Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food, 652-6953.
Chef Georgia the Jungle Food Truck, now in Wailua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice.
And we support and thank our underwriters. Mahalo to you for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We're going to have our fun drive coming up, and you can pre-do our fun drive for us by going to kkcr.org and just doing a donation. I'm going to see. I've got a handful of people in the room with me right now. I've got Donya Lilly. Are you on?
I think so.
Yay. And you go by Kat or Kathy Cowan?
Either one is fine.
All right. Marshall, are you up?
Aloha.
All right. So we're ready to roll. So we always have a whole bunch of different topics that we're talking about, some days more than others. Today is one of those that's just packed with a lot of ideas and concepts. And if there is a focal point, it is art. And, you know, Kauai Soapbox is really big on the role of social justice, too. So we are going to have that feathering in here. So there's a lot of elements that are happening this week, but one of the ones that happened last weekend this week that I'm really excited about is the Kauai Art Tour. And Donya, you are the main brainchild behind that, correct?
Yes, I'm the only brainchild behind it. So at this point, it's been pretty much a one-person show. So
a one-person show that is supporting a whole number of people, like 39 different Kauai artists and artisans.
Correct.
And Kathy, who I have known forever and loved deeply, but you go by Kat as your art name, right?
Yeah, I changed it when I opened a little gallery in downtown Kapa'a because it was easier to remember because of the gallery name. But I go by both.
Okay, well, so why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on with that?
Basically, last weekend was the portion of the tour that people could visit studios from Mihui to Waimea from 11 to 6 on Saturday and Sunday. And we had 16 artists spread across that geographical area of the island. And this coming weekend are studios from Wailua to Hanalei. So it's the same time, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Myself and Kat are both on this upcoming portion of the tour with our art and studios. And so people can find the guidebooks that are on our website or at different places on the island and pick them up and see maps and things they can use to go on the tour. And there's all kinds of information on our website, kauaiarttour.com.
Well, it's a really beautiful guidebook.
Thank you.
Really, really nice. It's got all these nice images on here. And I mean, when I look at it, it's looking like it's helping the community to be able to see the different types of artists that are around the community, and that's, is that the main piece of the idea here, or it's a little bit different than I think people normally have, where you go to their different places. It's like a self-guided tour.
Exactly. It is different. Most people are used to, I think, the concept of a gallery walk or an art night where, you know, it's sort of like, I sort of consider the Kapa'a one sort of like a block party with art. They have musicians and, you know, people setting up booths and things. Whereas this is geared more towards interacting with the artists in their creative spaces and, you know, seeing their process. A lot of the artists do demos of the type of work. I think Kat's going to be doing some glass demos. Is that correct?
Yes. I'll have my torch on and I'll be doing glass making.
Awesome. And Zoe is going to be a visiting artist at my studio, and she's going to be working on one of her beautiful painted surfboards. So, you know, you get to talk to the artists, see where they work, see their tools. They'll do demos, and, you know, there's also art available. But it's a lot of it is about connecting the local community with the artists, as well as visitors to the island with the artists. And it's a really unique experience in that way. And, you know, it's interesting because I just last week read this crazy statistic that 96% of Americans value art in the community and in their lives, but only 27% value artists. And that's like just a gigantic disconnect that, to me, it really speaks a lot about, you know, the way that our society interacts with the arts. And that's why I think something like an open studio tour is so great, because it can bridge that gap and really give value to the artist's process, their work, what they do, how it's made. So it's not just this product that's removed from any sort of, you know, chain of, you know, process and labor of love or whatever it is that goes into it.
Well, I'm glad that you bring that up, because that's one of the things that I'll be talking about, or will be talking about as the show progresses, is just like some of the challenges or some of the costs that go into art. I know that many of us struggle just to make it to the grocery store to be able mm-hmm. to buy what we need to buy to eat. And so people will look at the art and go, oh, you know, $400 or something like that, and with not really even any connection or understanding about the materials that go into it and the amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Kat, what do you find? Who is the main customer? Your art, I would say, is kind of modestly priced. It's not cheap. It's not incredibly expensive. Who buys the art the most?
You know, I've done a wide spectrum of artwork. Everything from large community sculptures that were purchased by the State Foundation that they commissioned me to do, to my more commercial work, which is my jewelry. And, you know, it is about the process and also finding what people will take with them, you know. And sadly, we do have to make work that we can continue to survive from and that we can actually bring income and, you know, make it our job, make it our living.
Right. Because I think that's the big piece, right, is what I notice with the arts, and I've yet to find my really solid medium. I do things, I learn things, I take classes, and I'll have fun. Like, I was able to make a little film. I was able to publish a book. You know, I do different things that are an expression of art, even if that's like how you sculpt out your garden or things like mm-hmm. that. But none of those things have been something that have brought me money. And when I look at what is out there, most people in the arts do it straight from the heart, just passion. And what I think speaks so beautifully about the arts is people will do it whether they get paid or not.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to really thrive, it's important to be able to get paid. I want to like just list a few of, since I decided to do this show particularly focused on the arts, I just looked just on bulletin boards some of these things that are coming up. Tonight at 6:30 at the Kauai Public Library, Bill Fernandez, he's an author, he's going to be doing a talk. It's going to be a bit, The Rainbows Over Kauai, And oops, it's the Kapaa Library.
Kapaa.
The Kapaa Library, and he's got a new book coming out. I want to get him in here about growing up in the time of war on Kauai. I think that will really feed into a lot of other really important discussions. There is a writer's conference, May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. I'm going to go to that. You're going to it, too?
Well, no, actually, I was raising my hand because one of our artists on the tour, David Dinner, is the person that's spearheading the writer's conference. So he's actually organizing that and doing the tour. And I think there's a lot of people like yourself. You said you do writing and things like that, who do a lot of sort of cross-disciplinary things. I actually write as well, and so David is actually the organizer of the writers' conference, and he's a painter on the Open Studio Tour this weekend.
Well, that'll be great. So he's a painter on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go with the cross disciplines, and I know, like, for myself, when I'm going, sometimes just learning a new thing or learning some more information is something that helps people to be happier. At least it does for me. So other things that are coming up, Peter Pan, Kalaheo School, that's the K through 5. I'm going to that for sure. It's coming up this weekend and next weekend. Beauty and the Beast is this weekend and next weekend. So those are two great plays that I think people could really enjoy. One is adults, one's kids. I mean, I think Beauty and the Beast has got both. That's going to be at the Kauai War Memorial Convention Hall. Island School Chorus, they've got a big presentation tomorrow at the Kauai Performing Arts Center. It's called Mouse and Music. And the director, Philip Steinbecker, he does just such an incredible job on those things. So he is really good. I see also the there's going to be a Hula Hoike coming up next May 2nd. And that's the Halau Kale Kukui Hi'ilawe. That's that group. That's at Kilauea Theater, 6:30. So that's a really one. I would like to take a little musical song break. That is, this is Walt Kaoli. Let me see if I've got this coming up right.
Almost 1,000 people in your age, and they actually, in honor of the mountain, they built.
Sorry.
Cool.
Walt Kelly, he has such a beautiful voice, and he is such a nice man, and he comes over here and sings quite a bit, and song and music is a big part of also the arts. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, okay. I'm at the lookout at Wailua, looking over the river, and I just want to say thank you so much. I really appreciate your show, and I was just talking with Marshall, and I said, you know, nobody has a clue, or nobody has a reason to complain that there's nothing to do for the children on Kauai. There's nothing for them. There's blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, here we have, it's like my calendar's full of like, okay, well, do we do this or do we do that? And I guess that's just because they're not listening to KKCR and telling you what's going on.
Well, another good place is that TGI Friday in the newspaper. There's, I guess like looking around at the posters sometimes. Not everybody knows how to promote their art, but there is there's lots of incredible things going on. And I saw that I'm trying to remember the name of the play for this summer. They've got a really great performance. Looking at Marshall, I want you to look it up. They've got the Summer Stars program. They always do just an amazing job.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what play it is this summer?
Which one is it this summer?
Yeah, do you know?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, we'll put Marshall up to that. He's going to have to find that for us. But
Beauty and the Beast is this weekend?
Beauty and the Beast is this weekend, and Peter Pan is also this weekend at Kalaheo, and I happen to know Peter, so I am going to go to that. I know Peter. Hey, I've got clout in going to see this one. He was one of the elves at the Christmas thing that at the council building this past Christmas.
And of course, we can't talk money wise, but
no,
are there special deals for like families with children under the age of whatever?
For Peter Pan, I'm sure that there are. There almost always are anyway, but I don't know on all of these. Donya was mentioning another play that looks like a great play in there.
Yeah, I think you found
the Prodigal Father. Yeah.
So
that, I think, is over.
The Summer Stars, which is Hawaii Children's Theater, is...
I love it.
They're doing their production of Alice in Wonderland Jr. this summer, and registration is now open. You can go to hawaiichildrenstheater.org.
No, I sure hope Isaac is going to be in it.
You know, I, having done alternative education, it is such an amazing way to get your kid to connect to reading, cooperating, public speaking. I have seen kids that struggle just flourish. The Summer Stars program is tear-jerking for me, and I don't cry very easily.
Oh, it is. I know. And when I went to, what was the play, and I saw Isaac Doobie, he was like the head of the whole play. And I remember holding him in my arms because I'm a labor and delivery nurse when he was born. And I had to go three times just so I could pay attention to the other players, just so I didn't just, like, zone in on him.
Yeah, I mean, they really can show their beauty and their capability. I saw Avenue Q, which...
Oh, I missed that one. I really wanted to see that.
That was so unbelievably good, and it was... That's like Sesame Street, but for the early 20-something, so it talks about all the inner-city angst, and it was really funny, and it was grown-up Hawaii Children's Theater players, grown-up summer stars. And they were young adults, and it was really great. So thank you.
I missed it, too. But I just got to say, you know, it's so great that, you know, we have KKCR because you don't hear this kind of stuff on, I won't mention the other radio stations. But, like, we have a real connection as to, okay, this is what you can do tonight. This is what you could do this weekend. This is what... I just want to thank you guys.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And I want to thank all the people who put things together like this. Like Donya helped put this artist tours together. We mentioned David Dinner. There's others that put the Kauai Writers Conference together. And I want to give a shout out to like the art nights at Kilauea and Kapa'a and Hanapepe. Those are really good, as the county might say, economic development drivers. But it does help to address... The starving.
Right. I'm not too keen on the Kapa art night.
Because let me guess, do you want to live right there?
Do you want to tell us about it? I work with all those guys, so I can kind of...
I just got there right before it started, and I was like, okay, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel badly that Kapa's, you know, like that it went that direction.
It got really popular really fast, and right now we're dealing with, you know, just trying to set up parameters so that it is a nicer experience for people. And, you know, some of the people that are involved with it are balking a little bit, but we kind of have to do it or we're going to lose it, you know, so.
Oh, I know, because they're setting up at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon so they can get a spot.
Yeah, some of the things that we're trying to do, we just had somebody from the county come and observe and give us his input on some of the things that he felt were things to be concerned about. And, you know, and one of the things is, you know, the food trucks there, a lot of them came the night before. Or they set up blockades.
Really?
Yeah, and so we're kind of... I mean, I kind of threw out an idea of maybe making that taking that fence down at the park. I think in the Kapa planning, in the Kapa plan for Kapa Town, that's supposed to be a multi-purpose park. And so we thought maybe it'd be good to put picnic tables or and have
a
food truck.
You're getting on another subject. We have county parks for people and children and families, and
I'd like to see that.
We spent $40,000 to take away our park from our children up in the homestead.
Oh yeah.
How did you do that? Putting the fence in?
Oh no, they built a dog park.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And county parks are supposed to be for children and families.
Well, they like having the sports field, and that's been the big controversy for the park in Kapa'a Town.
I didn't even realize that was a multi. I just thought it was a soccer field, and that's what it was.
Well,
supposed
that's
to
what
be.
They've been using it for. But in the town plan, which came out, I forget when, a long time, way before me, they had planned to make that a multi-purpose park or a town park. So I'd like to see it with trees.
The problem is they spent all this money to make a dog park. The dogs have pools, they've got trees that we planted out for Aniki, but people are letting their dogs go free in the soccer field. I don't get it.
Yeah, you got to give input on that.
You're bringing up a good topic for another show. Maybe I'll do a show on parks, and that would be, you know, I always invite movement on what we're talking about, but... So that's great.
No, I just, you know, it just really amazes me when people say, oh, there's nothing for our children to do. All they can do is drive around in their cars. You know, it's like, come on, listen to KKCR.
Well, there is lots. There's lots in the sports program, and especially in the ocean, when the ocean is good. So thank you, caller. Thanks so much.
Great, and thank you, KKCR.
You're welcome.
Aloha.
Aloha. So I found the page in your book. It's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Exactly. Yeah. One thing I tried to do in the guidebook was not only feature the visual arts, but I think it's really important for arts programs to cross-promote. Because a lot of times, like with theater, you were just announcing all of those theater programs and
musics
and things. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you might have an audience of your, you know, little clique of writers or actors or whatever, and they don't actually realize that there are other things happening. So what I did was I did a sort of cross-promotion with Kauai Community Players and had them put an ad in the guidebook for their Prodigal Father, which ran from the 2nd to the 19th of April, and then they have a show coming up in May, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And then in their programs, they actually put an ad for the art tour so that people going to their theater shows could then also find out about the open studio tour. And there's also, you'll see on page 15 and 16, there's ads for the Kilauea Art Night and the Hanapepe Art Night, and that was another sort of, you know, exchange that I did with them, because it's, I think it's important that we all work together, all of the arts on the island, to help each other, you know, build each other up.
That's right. And I see that you have framing and all kinds of things like that in there. So there's we have a call on the dog park.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll take the call on the dog park. We'll take the call on the dog park. That's what Kauai Soapbox is about. KKCR, you're on the air. Thank you.
Hi, I'm calling because I was listening and I heard the woman complaining about the money that went into the dog park.
In Wailua?
Yeah. And, you know, no judgment or anything, but, you know, I have a dog. I don't have children, and some people have dogs instead of kids in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really not a lot of places that, I mean, a lot of the county beaches and county parks, dogs aren't allowed.
Right. That's
and
true.
And so it's nice that they're doing things to make places for us to enjoy our animals in a safe place. And, I mean, the dogs being let loose in the soccer park is a completely different issue. But, you know, dog parks aren't a bad thing. And I don't think that's what she was saying, but I just wanted to also voice my opinion on that as a dog owner.
And I know that the dog park that is in Kalihiwai, that is on the Waikoa property, so that is another example of the generosity of Joan and Bill Porter. That was private donation that paid for that. It was, you know, cost some money to put that fencing in. It's got the pools and things like that. And in that case, I know the Rotary Club of Hanalei helped put that in. And so sometimes there's private donors that will create things like dog parks, too. And I want to honor both you and the previous caller. Everybody is kind of aware of the children that they care for, that they want to take care of. And I know that many people actually do feel that way about their dogs. And I'm one of those people who have children and dogs. So,
right.
I do want to really acknowledge, and what you're speaking of is, it's become tough to be a dog. You're not supposed to bark. You're not supposed to be off the leash. You're not supposed to be out of the fenced-in areas. So it's almost illegal to have the natural behavior of a dog, and then you wonder why they can get neurotic. And even, like, I'm about, you know, picking up dog poop and stuff like that, too. But when it is such a big deal, like dog poop is somehow really bad for the environment, but every other creature that poops is...
I see horse manure.
Right.
You know, people who are riding horses out in the community don't have to jump off their horse and pick up all the manure, do they?
Right.
I mean, not that I have no problem picking up my dog poop, but you're right. It should be applied to other animals as well.
Right. And ecologically, when we pick up poop and put it in a plastic bag and throw it in the landfill, it doesn't feed the ecosystem the way regular dog poop does. So I'm just trying to honor you, caller, that, hey, I get it, and I'm glad that you love
your
dog.
I felt like it was a little stab in my heart when I heard her get a little upset about the dog park. I was like, well, you know, I take my dog to the dog park, and it's awesome, and I'm
And we all have our impacts, and I'm a band mom, and so I know one of the things that goes on with the Kapaa Art Night is the battle of the bands, and I have a teenage band in my life, and they like to play their music loud, and of course I go down there, I'm like one of their number one fans. I believe there's four moms who we are probably compete to be the number one fans, but, you know, what makes one person happy impacts another, and it is definitely interesting because it is the battle of the bands. They each start
something I cannot
bringing
feel.
Their sound up louder so that there's not competition. So it's a beautiful thing. And then when you close it down to some, who gets to stay, who doesn't, you know, and that'll feed into something that we're going to be talking about a little bit later on about housing. But thank you so much for calling in. And bless your
dog.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Yeah, I think the cacophony, if people are into cacophony, they will enjoy that more. I'm more of a silence person, so I find that hard to deal with for the Kapaa Art Night.
Yeah, you know, it's part of the cultural, you know, aspect, though. You need music, you need dancing. You know, it's like if you start cutting too much into the freedom of culture of it all, it kind of tends to lock it down.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox on the station that loves you. And I have Donya Lillian here and Kat Cowan, two artists and one who is also promoting art. And we're talking about a whole lot of different things. And Kathy, you were bringing something up that I think is very important, and it will flow even. I want to bring in a little bit the art of what's going on at Mauna Kea in a few moments, and I am expecting some calls from the front line on that. But how do we keep our freedoms out there, right? It's like, and really the Battle of the Bands is something that I sit there and watch, and I think, oh, my goodness, who's the adult? You know, when I get... you know, big man ready to literally beef my, you know, at that time, he's grown now, but 100-pound bass player, you know, over in the music. You know, it's like,
Yeah,
I have that conflict that goes on out there over that thing and freedom, right?
Yeah. You know, it is difficult since it started happening. You know, everybody wants to come down and take a part in it. And so we have to kind of manage it in a way that allows for our creative people to still participate without getting turned off or, not being able to do what they do. And so we're hoping that, you know, with some of the regulation that we're working on, you know, permission from the shop owners that have a building right there on Main Street, keeping them off the sidewalks and trying to spread them out. You know, it's, you know, we're working on ways of permitting, you know, permitting people. I think for private businesses, you know, we shouldn't really make things difficult for our creative people. But at the same time, we have to pay for security guards, garbage pickup, advertising, insurance. You know,
right. There's all those costs, even the simplest things. And I know I was at the garden fair this last Saturday. It was really nice. And I was looking at the farmer's market. And again, there are those same kind of challenges. I know the Hawaii Farm Bureau puts that on. So everybody in there has to be a member. And then there's liability insurance and there's different costs that are involved. And, you know, if you're the person putting the event on, like you're putting on the art tour, there's cost. This booklet must have cost quite a bit of money.
Yes.
I bet this is a couple bucks a piece.
Yes, it was quite a chunk of the amount that I got some money from the Hawaii Tourism Authority.
Okay, great. But so as an example, here's a piece that costs money. So there's all these hidden costs that people don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it can close things down. As we get a little bit later in the show, something I want to kind of shift to a bit is housing, helping each other, and you know, all these ways, because you guys are you're bringing these up and different pieces are coming up. Like, people don't even have a place to walk their dog. Other people don't have a place to play with their kids. As more and more beaches get cut off, there's all kinds of things that get cut off. There's all kinds of great programs that are being opened and availed to people, but mostly by volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mostly it's volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yeah, venues are huge, you know, for the arts community, having places to do art shows, having performance areas, affordable areas mm-hmm. to teach classes, you know, that there's a lot of things that would really help our creative people if venues, you know, were
available.
Yeah, were available. And
Pat's been working, what, for how many years now on the committee for trying to start an art center?
I wrote a proposal last year we got funded for to do a study to look at the economic impact of an art center, you know, what that would be, what mm-hmm. the interest would be. Actually, we're doing a survey right now, kawaiiartsandculture.com, and we're asking people to put their input onto that survey.
I went in there and I got intimidated.
You did?
Why? Well, you know what? Because I'm not good enough at any one particular thing to feel like I can actually claim it.
I think a lot of people who are supporters just need to read past that mm-hmm. and really put write down what you think or what you, you know, what you want to support. And because I think a big part of it is not just about the artists, but about the people who support the arts as well.
Have you guys been following the Creative Technology Center that
yes.
just got approved?
Yes.
And so we'll be doing a show with them at some point in the not too distant future. And that was a very expensive project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's $11.5 million on the build-out.
Yes.
And it's going to be right there near the War Memorial Convention Center. And it is a 99-year lease at $1 a year going through Kauai Economic Development Board, you know, with the participation of the county, because the county really owns the land. And can the Art Center go into that, too?
Well, actually, the really great thing is that Olomana Lumis, which are the community planners for that, are also working on our Art Center project. And one of the things we kind of looked at is maybe this is a second phase, or, you know, there's a lot of...
Like build onto it?
Well, you know, it depends on where, what the interest is. You know, that's a big part of it, is finding enough interest to support it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of new in our survey and really reaching into the community to find out what the interest is.
Right, and then we'll look at, like, what how much that costs. We have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yes, is that me?
It is you.
Okay. I'm just calling to say that concerning an art center, I'm an artist, and one of the things that's not available is spaces where artists can go and work on their work.
Mm-hmm.
I live in an apartment. There's no room for, you know, really creating any kind of larger works of art. And there's a big red barn building down across the street from the Kealia Beach. It's, I think it's sitting empty still. It needs to be upgraded so it's safe. But I don't know why we can't find some old buildings like that, open them up, put up some movable walls, and make them open spaces for artists to go down and work and create some artwork. You know, having an art studio is essential for really serious working.
And the Creative Technology Center, I think, is something in that direction. I know Kahili Mountain Park was looked at that. The particular piece that you're speaking of that is privately owned and the...
isn't it condemned as well?
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean...
And that would cost about $1.5 million to fix. And so you're asking a really striking question that I think a lot of us ask. And it becomes another part of this larger topic. It's like going, we have... standards, building code, stuff that's so hard to meet.
For safety.
And so, yes, safety is important. And so these buildings go into disrepair because people don't have a spare $1.5 million to invest in the building.
Well, that may be the case, but maybe, you know, build some open space, some kind of roofing with, you know, movable, you know, with drop canvas or screening walls on a platform, places where people, I mean, this is no place for art studios. That's
yeah.
the big
well,
problem.
There's actually, and I've thought about this a lot, there, aside from, you know, condemned or places that are run down, there are so many empty retail spaces I see all over Lihue, in the mall, in Kapa'a, and those places, I'm just thinking, you know, why would so many people want them to sit empty for so long? Rather than having people utilize them.
That artists notoriously are broke.
Yes, but...
not only not art, very art studios, but not a lot of art heavy-duty art collectors that are going to spend enough money where an artist can support themselves basically on their art.
Yes, exactly. I'm actually not suggesting that artists should go and rent those places for the cost that they're asking, because that's why they're still sitting empty, is because people can't afford them.
But doesn't Kukui Grove have like a Kauai Artisans Guild show?
Yeah, Kauai Society of Artists, they've been donated a space, and they share it with the community, which is great.
That's good. It's good for showing.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we need is, I'm just putting it out there. I just wish we could find, if people are interested in, you know, renting out art studios, you know, or giving them up for free and letting artists come and go to make art.
Yeah,
that's what we need.
That is part of the consideration for the Art Center, actually.
Yeah, we've been looking at a lot of shells. But, you know, the real important issue, too, is finding economic stability, finding leadership. You know, it's great because the arts, if they go into an area, they're really good at revitalizing an area. And I know with Lihue Business Association, you know, they're really kind of interested in having the arts come down there. And if we had an art center there, you know, I think it would really help to revitalize.
Mm-hmm.
They need an art studio. You know, there's no spaces down on the North Shore. There are some galleries, but there really aren't any spaces where artists can go and work. I mean, and real estate is very expensive.
Also takes people within the community that are kind-hearted and generous to help donate. And, you know, it's because those artists are trying to, you know, find these areas to work so we can teach and... Mm-hmm. Have areas to make art and be creative and interact with the community for economic viability.
I want to give a shout out to Carlos,
too. I wanted to say one other thing. Carlos, down at the general store in
Honolulu,
is doing a lot to try to stimulate interest in the art community, and I really admire that effort. And at the same time, there's no space really inside this place while they're showing the art for people to be making art. So we need to find, if we can get some volunteers that have some old garages that they'd like to donate us or let go for very little, you know, a month for art studios, that would be fantastic. Maybe we can lead a drive.
And then what would go into that, too, and this is where we have this convergence of challenges that we'll discuss a little bit deeper later in the show, is if somebody did do that, then it's almost a commercial use of the space, so then all of a sudden they're violating their residential permit.
Well, it wouldn't
be
a commercial use of the space in the sense that it wouldn't be, they're not going to be selling their art out of there. Well, I'm talking about finding places where people, garages, spaces where people can go and create art studio space.
Right, but if they rent it, that's what we're seeing, the problem with the housing, is that you even rent to a roommate and all of a sudden you lose your homestead tax thing. And it just completely covers that over, of people driving over to learn. I have another caller. Thank you so much for calling
in. Okay.
Aloha.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Lachimosa.
Hi, Stephanie.
I've talked to you before, Felicia. I love your show.
Thank you.
And forgive me, please. I haven't been able to tune in to what's been going on, but I caught a couple of words at the beginning of my beginning of your show a little while ago. It was about the kids don't have enough to do. And then I just turned it back on again because I got back into my car. I only listen to you in my car. And I have a lot to say about this whole art thing. And I think the thing about the kids don't have enough to do and the whole thing about this art space, are we thinking about our kapuna? Our kapuna. The kids need to take care of our kapuna. And our kapuna need to be making art.
Yes, we, as part of our art center plan, we really do want to pull the kapuna in. We find them as a very vital aspect.
I'm a caregiver for a 70-some-odd-year-old Molokai-born Hawaiian, 100% Hawaiian man, who is my best friend, and I would love for him to be the seeing over person of an art center for kids and himself and efforts and have had him a breezeway to just be able to do things like that. I mean, I give him as much as I can for be able to rejuvenate the things from his youth, from his life that we will never know, to be able to connect with and reproduce and show us and share with us all of the things that we will never know.
And you said you had a second thought? you had the kids and the art studios. Was there, you said there was two things?
When I first heard about, the first only comment that I heard was the kids don't have enough to do. So I think the kids should be getting involved with the kapuna. And that's their thing to do. And my second thought is the kapuna. And then I turned you back on, and it was the art. I'm just hearing about this art space effort.
Well, we find that the kapuna have a lot to offer our community. And, you know, we feel that their input and their participation in some of our programming would be really vital. And so,
well, I'd like to see our kapuna doing art.
Yeah. That's part of why we're doing this study, to find out what the needs are for our community. And if you haven't taken it, or if your friend is interested in the arts, maybe they'd like to go to kawaiiartsandculture.com and, tell us what you want to do, because we are going by what the community wants. And
so that would be helpful. I want to give a shout out to Carol Yatsuda too.
Yes,
hasn't she just done an amazing thing for decades for art?
Yeah, she has.
Yeah. My guy, I call him Papa Lou, and he's the love of my life. But he does the funniest things. And like one time I came home and he painted his wastebasket, and it was all like Hawaiian petroglyphs.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And it just, and it's like we still have that wastebasket, and it's like about 20 years old. And it's just, he just has his funny little way of looking at the world and then re-showing it. And these are the things that I admire about him the most, that we are so desperately losing.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I have more callers holding.
I will let you go. Aloha. Thank you very much.
Aloha. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to clarify what I was saying about kids don't have to do. It was a comment that, I hear all the time that,
right.
Well, there's nothing to do for the kids.
She just hadn't heard the whole call, but most of the callers
did. Yeah.
So, as you said, there is so much to do. And
there is. My calendar's full.
Yeah, and a couple weeks ago I had some people in here for a Keiki Ohanale program that's coming up, that's after schools and in the summers, and some really amazing things. So there is a lot of effort out there. So thank you. Yeah, she owned that she had just listened for a moment.
Yeah, but I want to also say that, like, 30 years ago when I lived, I'm giving away my age, 30 years ago when I lived in L.A., we had a wonderful place called the Clay House. In the front, it was where you could display your work, and in the back, you went down the alley and you parked and you paid, like, $40 a month, and you had studio space, and they'd have, like, 12 wheels and all anything you needed, and if you wanted to hear music, you had to put on your earphones so you weren't interrupting someone else. It was the most incredible place, and we all planted an herb garden in the back, and it was just amazing.
What community in California was it in, and is it still there?
Yeah, Santa Monica.
Santa Monica, and then I know in Oakland they have a place called The Crucible that does just amazing things with recycled,
mm-hmm.
and it's the
glass makers. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of metal, and mm-hmm. and that's in Oakland, and Oakland is kind of an area filled with industrial waste, so they've got a lot of material to work with, and they have a lot of abandoned warehouses and things. So uh-huh. Santa Monica's kind of higher end, but it is higher end.
Well, it wasn't back then.
Well, what's the challenge here is that everything, even a little house that you might live in, is like renting commercial space depending upon which area you might be in. And more as we have different ways to utilize spaces, it is very, very expensive to
I know, and I would like to continue my artistry of doing clay work and doing pottery and selling it, but I can't afford to put in all the stuff
equipment
that needs to be put in. So yeah. It was like,
It was such a wonderful place, and even if you didn't know what you were doing, people would come in there just for an hour and have fun.
Well, have you taken the survey that Kat's been talking about? Because if this is something that a lot of people say, yes, this would be awesome, let's have a space with community art studios, then people should go and take the survey so that they know, yes, this is what the people of Kauai want to have.
And it can be economically viable. I mean, that's the thing. If you start a little business where you do help or where you allow and offer, you know, arts
right.
for people so, that come in off the street. But we used to have a place like that for a little while. I remember a long time ago. Must have been 20 years ago or something. It's at kauaiartsandculture.com.
Okay.
And you know what? If you find that a lot of the survey doesn't really fit who you are, fill in the little blank spaces.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Thank you so
much. Anyway, I hope that other listener didn't think I was saying that.
It's okay.
But, you know, that when kids get in trouble, the parents always say, well, there's nothing for them to do but boogie board and ride skateboards.
But there is. So thank you so much for calling again.
Okay, thank you.
Aloha. You're on the air.
It's Stephanie from the West Side again. And I'm listening a little bit more to what's really going on in your program. And I just wanted to say that I think that there's a lot of opportunity and we need to appeal to. And on the West Side, GNR, Jay Robinson, the Robinsons, we need to talk to them. They have spaces, they have structure, they have land, they have communities that they own. I live in one of those communities. It's called Pakala Camp.
Okay. Well, so do you have an in with them? Maybe they would be up for that.
Things like that are a really good option for us to find a way to create the things that you're talking about. Because they already have the licenses or the whatever to do the whatevers, yeah?
Well, even those foundations, you know, they serve a lot of people in the community, but they also have their own balances that they have to keep, you know? So,
but there's more to it than that we know mm-hmm. that exists in our eyesight, in our understanding. There's more available than we are aware of.
Exactly. And that's what we're trying to reach out into the community and find, you know, those generous hearts.
Stephanie,
forget that.
Stephanie, we have a really weak connection.
Okay, I'm going to drop out.
Okay, aloha. Bye. But she brings up a very good point, and mm-hmm. I think it's one that is affecting everything here. We have billions of dollars coming into this island in terms of what people have in their portfolio that are buying land. And so the billionaires are kind of pushing out the millionaires. And, you know, how do we work that we don't become Lanai?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because exactly. I think that that's something that is happening. And even now that when we see some of these public housing or affordable housing, they've been renamed workforce housing. And that actually makes me really nervous because that. Just the words. Sometimes when there's words that are used, because they don't want to call them affordable housing, and maybe somebody said, oh, don't call it that, because then those people feel like they are less than something else, so they call it workforce housing. But that, to me, feels like indentured servitude, because as we have the uber-rich, and they even bring those who wash their cars and clean their toilets anymore, and they have a whole system of security that they don't even need house sitters, you know, somebody in their guest house watching. We are marginalizing our people. We're driving people away. And next week we're going to do a deeper show on this. Tomorrow at the county council meeting is going to be about the homestays. And so I'm just bleeding in a little bit of some of these other elements, because when we are talking about the starving artist, and darling Kathy, without putting you on the spot, you're getting squeezed out of here, right? I know you kind of found a way to be happy about it, but I'm going to own it. I'm not happy. I like you. And you bring
thank you.
So much to this community, and you have art all over. Like, you did the wave, the mosaic wave at Hanalei School. You have pieces right down there in the state area, right? You've done a number of different pieces of work for...
Well, I worked on Kamalani projects, but... Yeah, it's bittersweet. You know, I've been here 32 years, and one thing I noticed when I came here, you know, the island is very tourist-oriented. So, you know, my little odd jobs were service industry. You know, I worked in a T-shirt shop. I worked in a surf shop. I worked with Felicia. I worked in a restaurant, and I worked in a bar. You know, it's service industry, you know, either cleaning for the hotels or, you know. And so if you thrive to, or if you really want to strive to do your art or do something else, it's really hard. You know, you have to rely on ways to earn money that are out of the service industry or... You know, I mean, we still have to kind of appeal to tourism because we want to sell our products to tourists and visitors and people who come to the island and purchase art.
I think it's balance. It's an issue of balance. And so it's not easy to answer the question. And when you have an organization like the government, and I'm not putting down the government, you know, the government needs to pay for itself. It pays for itself through taxes. And there are different ways that they can earn income. One I saw last Saturday night, there was probably 15 cop cars shaking down the people right there in the parking lot at Coco Palms. That's one way. You could pull people over and give them tickets for whatever thing they can't afford. It's true, though. You know, it is true. It's like, oh, my gosh, how can we be doing this to people? You know, that's one way. We have the taxes is another way, and so we can get addicted to the non-resident owner because they are taxation without representation. Tomorrow at the county council, they'll be talking about homestays, and, you know, people will get really angry at the homestays because they'll say, oh, you know, they're renting out a bedroom to somebody from somewhere else, and they can't do that. But it's really, in fact, the only way they can hang onto that house.
It's small business. And, you know, one model I was looking at, and, you know, we're moving to New Zealand, and one of the things that is really attractive to me is they have this thing that they call cottage industry. Mm-hmm. And it's where they allow you, there's permitted areas where you can do your business and live there. And, you know, we're moving onto a place like this, and I can have a little gallery where I work and live, and I can grow my garden there. And it's close to the beach, and people drive by my house every day, and I can put a sign out. And I think that, you know, allowing people to be more economically
flexible
and
creative,
there's probably not going to be such a need and burden to our government, you know. And
I know I'm always joking actually about rents, you know, just, and I've been here for 4 years, and even since I've moved here, it's unbelievable how much the rents have gone up just in those few years. And so I've joked with people, I'm like, where are they expecting people who work regular jobs to live? Are they going to build a barge off the coast of the island and have everybody come in on a boat in the morning to work and then leave the island at night?
In places like Iquitos, Peru, Peru, people do live on little floating shacks in the Amazon with wire out there, and they poop right in the river. And it used to be in the time of rubber, a lot of rich, and they still have the people in the floating suburbs of shacks that live in a dangerous environment. It's this economic stratification that is really powerful. And what we've been speaking of so far is arts that maybe people might consider a luxury item. But in the next hour, too, I want to be looking at how arts really are a very effective part of social change, and they make a very strong difference.
Well, interestingly, in that same the statistics that I was talking about earlier with how 97% of people value arts in America, but only 27% of people value artists.
Like handsome rock stars or beautiful movie stars?
I guess, yeah, that's actually probably true. Those are the 27% that they value. But no, the other thing I was going to mention is that a lot of people don't know that Hawaii is actually the third, we have the third highest number of artists per capita in the whole country.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know and, that either. And that's another reason why something like an open studio tour is so great, because we have so many artists here, you know, and getting them to engage with the community and people seeing that and being able to buy directly from them, you know, it's just a good thing. But there's actually a woman on the Big Island, Tiffany, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name right, De'et Shafto, and she actually did an economic study about artists on the Big Island and the economic impact of the arts and things like that. And what they actually found was that the artists actually contributed a greater portion to the economy and the stimulus of the economy than any kind of government stimulus, like attempt at the government stimulating the economy.
Actually, I have a national study that's really interesting. It was done by the Americans for the Arts. They did a comprehensive study in 2012, and what they did is across the nation, they studied 182 regions. They called the report the Arts and Economic Prosperity 4 Report, and what they found is that the arts industry created $135.2 billion, and I think 61 billion was nonprofit generated, and 74 billion was money generated by businesses around these arts events. And so what they found is that when arts come into a community, is they not only enhance the arts community, but they also enhance, you know, the businesses around where the arts events are going on.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, so that's great. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. We are just a little past the top of the hour, 5:02 and a half, on the station that loves you. And Kauai Soapbox, this is Felicia, is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
K224CQ Moloa'a, K284AL Haleiwa.
Thousands of cigarette butts litter our parks and beaches. Is Kauai an ashtray? Smokers, if you're in your car or at the beach, hang on to your butts. Protect ocean wildlife and keep Kauai clean. A reminder from the Surf Rider Foundation.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
Oh, mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And in another couple weeks, we will be doing our fund drive, so you can help us have lots of content during that time. We always do have content, but by pre-donating, you could be an early bird if you go to kkcr.org. So, Kauai Community Radio actually is another form of truly the arts. That we support many different types, and we're very, very excited about all the different ways that we are able to help the community. In the studio with me is Kat Cowan and Donia Lilly, artists who are helping to support what's going on. And I also now have Michael Dexter Smith. Michael, can you say hi?
Hi, everybody.
Oh, I got to try again.
Hi, everybody.
Okay. It's not quite loud enough. I want you to say it again.
Oh, hi, everybody.
Okay.
What's the English accent?
It's the English accent. Hey, he's got a good
English accent. So he's with the Rotary, and we'll be pulling him into this conversation a little bit, too. Because, Michael, one of the things that we have been talking about is, well, certainly the arts. We've been pretty deep on talking about all the different types of opportunities with the arts. I think that we will soon be hearing from the YWCA, too, because they've got a pretty creative thing going on tomorrow night. That's the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. This is pretty fun. It's like the guys are down there in high-heeled shoes. They can wear slippers. They can even wear bed slippers if they want. But it is an awareness of, you know, violence to women and, you know, how we can minimize that kind of action. So that's 5 to 7 p.m. at Kukui Grove, and I'm one of those that I can't walk a mile in those high-heeled shoes. I will fall down. I do not walk a mile in those shoes. So we will probably be hearing very soon from the YWCA, but that is tomorrow night, so that's another thing going on. I will probably be there first, and then I'm going to go to the Island School Mouse and Music performance. Actually, really, really an incredibly good performance. So we have a caller on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to call back as I was driving along. I heard you mention something about the affordable housing that's being built in, I think the one you were referring to is in Princeville.
No.
And now they want to call it the workforce housing. And it's just like, that's a real classist kind of name, in my opinion. But not only that, I'm rather appalled at the tenement-like layout of all of the buildings. They put so many buildings there. There's no place for anyone to walk outside, practically. And I feel like, is it that they think that people who work for a living on a certain level aren't entitled to have little balconies or little outdoor spaces, and that only they should be sandwiched together in tenement-like buildings? I'm very appalled by the whole situation.
Well, I know the big development that is very specifically called workforce housing is in LA, and Alexander Baldwin did put up that land. Although Princeville...
I was talking about the Princeville.
Yes, so that one, at least on the side, it says affordable housing, and that's going to be rentals. And often when affordable housing is built, the big challenge is that they have to minimize cost as much as they can. But I understand that what your comment is there, and we have many, many challenges that we're going to be exploring now and next week. And so, yes, it...
Yeah, hopefully they have some green space there. They have some trees for the people. And, you know, I'm thinking, my God, I mean, what do they want to do? Have the people of... This is Hawaii. Are they supposed to be living in hot boxes because they work for a living? I don't know. I don't approve of that.
Well, I mean, that is the crisis that is coming and formulating up.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in, too. Talk to you later, and I'd really love your show. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha. And you are on the air.
Hey, Felicia. It's Christy from the YWCA.
Hey, Christy. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. So tell us about the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes.
Oh, tomorrow at Kukui Grove from 5 to 7, we are going to be having the Walk a Mile. So we have shoe sizes for men up to 18 wide, and we invite all of the men in the community to come and walk a mile in some high-heel women's shoes. There's going to be a bunch of groups participating and some prizes for the winners. And, of course, this is to raise awareness for how men can help to stop violence against women.
And so is this a fundraiser? Is there, I can't mention dollars or anything, but is there donations that happen there, or is it mostly an awareness event?
It's mostly an awareness event.
And so is it such that organizations like, as a random example, the Rotary Club of Hanalei, maybe they might send a bunch of men down there to waltz around in high-heeled shoes? We have a Rotary in here. A Rotarian.
That would be wonderful. We have a lot of men that come from the county on a team. We have some men from the different gyms from around the island, Kauai Muscle and Fitness, Kauai Athletic Club. a bunch of guys come from those places to try to win, see if they can walk a mile in high heels the fastest.
What do they win?
We have a bunch of different surprises and some gift certificates.
Well, that's fun. And so I have a question. Do they wiggle?
They do. They wiggle, and it's amazing how they cannot even believe. Like, they can only stay in the shoes for, like, 5 seconds, and they're like, this is awful.
I have to say, I'm that way, and I fall down. Like, for me, I just, like, I can't wear heels. I'm going to twist my ankle, something like that. Since I got you on the line,
mm-hmm.
If there are women or men, because really any gender can have family abuse going on.
That's right.
If people have trouble, can you tell us really quickly how they can get help through the YWCA?
Absolutely. We have a 24-hour crisis line. They can call 245-6362. And someone's available to answer that phone 24 hours a day.
245-6362?
That's right.
Crisis line. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. So we are available to direct them to the right service. We have tons of different kinds of services for all different kinds of abuse and for support and for help and healing through those different abuses. So we really just want to invite everyone to come down and have a little bit of a fun time with us tomorrow. There's going to be some food and some Hawaiian music and lots of men's high heels.
That is so fun. Thank you. Thank you so much. And
can I say hi? Hi, Christy. It's Kat. I work with the Y.
Yeah, we were just talking about that on the way up here.
Yeah, hi. How are you? Thanks for calling. I love the Y.
Oh, good. Me too.
I'm so happy. I love working with Christy, too.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks so much. Have a great night.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Michael Dexter Smith. Mm. Rotarian.
Thank you for inviting me. Yes, indeed, a Rotarian.
A Rotarian. And the Rotary, what we were just talking about, like, some of the disparity in income, and I want to say that the Rotary Club does a lot to help bridge places where there are struggles and gaps. And almost most of what the Rotary Club of Hanalei, am I saying it right? Rotary
Club? Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
The Rotary Club of Hanalei, right?
You guys mostly help events and needs on island. I know because I work with you. How I know you is through the food pantry in Kilauea, the Christ Memorial Food mm-hmm. Pantry in Kilauea.
Yep, which we started with the church. Yeah.
So we every Saturday
mm-hmm.
from 3:30 to 4:30, mm-hmm. and it seems like we feed maybe 150 plus people.
We do. It's about 70 people that turn up to shop, and that feeds about 150, 160 family members.
And it is fun. It's fun to be a part of it. It's fun to be a part of the whole shopping, giving scene.
We try and make it as much fun. I do, certainly, as much fun for the people coming to shop. It's difficult. It's giving food. And, you know, these are people that need food. And you know, it's not easy for them even to walk up the front steps, some of them.
I think, though, I like our no-shame service situation there, though, and a lot of smiles in the room.
Yep.
And we're all going through this. Here we're having a show largely on the arts.
Yep.
And a lot of starving artists out there. And people, you don't have to be an artist. There's so many different ways that people get squeezed and marginalized. We have largely a service economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that you're very big on helping with education. As I was reading in the paper, did I see $805,000 were raised last year and distributed?
We did through a program that one of our members, Rick Cox, started. Was Adopt a Classroom. And it started very small, and we all adopted classrooms. I adopted one down at Kilauea School. It went on from there. We bought a lot of iPad minis for the schools. It carried on to adopt an after-school program, which was absolutely huge. The unmet need there was massive. And Rick now, along with a very big benefactor, has taken this program. And done what Rotary is very good at, is seeing a need in the community, and starting a discussion about it, and then doing something about it, and then handing it on. We did it with rescue tubes.
Right.
We did
that saved a lot of lives.
Saved a lot of lives. 76, I think, to date, known lives, and we get some wonderful letters. I always say to the two guys that started it, I'd love to be remembered for the fact that I saved 76 people. I can't say that, but certainly helped that out. That's gone off and been spun off now. The adopter will be spun off as well into its own 501c3. You know, we've done GOOT, which is growing our own teachers.
Okay, right. That's a very good one and very necessary. When I was on the school community council for Kapaa High, we were trying very, very hard to get our own alumni to come back. Not just because we love them and appreciate them, but also because they could live with their grandmother. Because even if you make $45,000 a year or a little bit more as a teacher, that's not enough to be able to make ends meet, even if you're married to somebody who, you know, if you're both making that much, you probably can afford to rent a place.
So, then we saw the need in the Kilauea community for a food pantry, and we started that with the church. I would like, I hope, and I'm incoming president for Rotary, to begin also to sort of uplift some of these communities by also starting to provide a program we've called loosely KVIP, which is the Kauai Virtual Incubator Program, which it will incubate new businesses on the island, primarily, and I would say primarily, but women and youth, to uplift them, because they uplift a community by, if you add that foundation, that economic foundation, it lifts the whole community.
And an interesting statistic, the biggest pool of homeless people are single white women. I mean, there's a lot of people who are struggling for housing, and I bet if you queried it, those children are more often than not boys than girls. It is hard to rent a place with a boy. It's almost harder than if you have a dog. And you know, we have to really take a serious look at what that means when we don't allow a very important segment of our community, which is young males, to easily find housing. So that's a big challenge. I want to give a shout out right now to all landlords and people who do provide housing to people who live here and who don't discriminate against families or families with pets, because even, you know, I was a teacher, and kids with pets, it develops very good habits and responsibilities. It brings really great character traits forward, and also adults with pets are happier, healthier for the most part. And you know, we can get the calls on barking dogs and all that. I'd like to wait on that right now. But so, Michael, I enjoy saying his name, Michael Dexter Smith.
Thank you so much.
Next Monday, you guys are stepping out of the normal box of helping the North Shore and Kauai in general. Tell us what you're doing next Monday, because it's a little bit artsy.
It's a little bit artsy indeed. This was a regular program we had for Rotary, which was really just a member program, was a mini golf outing. I suggested that perhaps we could take that mini golf outing and put half of the proceeds from it towards the relief of the issues in Vanuatu, where the cyclone Pam went through. It's kind of taken a life of its own now. We've already got about $3,000 of donations directly for Vanuatu relief. And we've got about 100 people turning up for this mini golf event, thanks to somewhat to Felicia, but about 100 people turning up. We'll be sharing the funds between some of the Rotary programs I've talked about and Vanuatu, but I'm hoping to send something of the order of 120 to 150 fresh water stations to Vanuatu. It's 80 islands, 250,000 people, and they need fresh water. And so we're going to do that through our Rotary Club down in Port Vila, which I found out is the capital of Vanuatu over time.
So fresh water, you mean clean drinking water?
Drinking water.
Because they probably have fresh water, it's just not clean?
Correct, correct. I'll correct myself, and it's clean water, yeah.
Clean water. So have you gotten a good update? I know that you're speaking with the Rotary down there. How are the people doing? How is restructuring going? Did you ever get a death count?
A death count? No, I didn't get a death count.
How about a displacement count?
The displacement count is enormous. If you look online, the numbers of displaced people, those buildings were not designed for a cyclone of that intensity coming through, and it hit them head-on, much as Iniki hit us. The reports are that they are desperate for everything. Obviously, their support, and partly why I was interested in that part of the Pacific, was that I lived in New Zealand for a couple of years, and so Vanuatu, Samoa were very close to that, to Australia and New Zealand. Relief is pouring in, but we know from our experience from Iniki that, you know, they need everything.
They need everything.
And water is one of the first things. Food is getting in, but you've got 80 islands. It's an archipelago of over 80 islands with people all across all 80 islands. I mean, just the logistics of getting material to them is enormous.
So, are any Rotarians going to go down there?
You know, not at the moment. We Rotarians as a group travel all over the world. We've done so much with polio. I mean, this is one of our big things. We spent hundreds of millions of dollars on polio eradication across the world. What we will do over the course of time is start moving people in there or helping various groups in there. But, you know, they don't need more feet on the street at the moment. They've got plenty of people. They need supplies and resources down there. You know, they don't need watchers. I mean, I would be watching and carrying things. They don't need me. They need people that can construct houses, and they need people that can, provide medical care and things like that.
So, will the Rotary be keeping an eye on it, that when the time is such that they need workers down there to help? Like, we have a pretty strong South Pacific population here, and so they may be even among those who would like to go and help reconstruct and go and help clean, you know? So
yeah.
It would be nice to be able to maybe get an update in another couple months.
Certainly, I'm in touch with the... I was actually quite surprised when I first sent an email down there. I was kind of surprised I got an email reaction quite quickly. I thought that all their telecommunications would be down as well. But I got a response fairly rapidly. As I say, their needs are basic. Water, food, supplies, and logistics help at this point in time, which is not what Rotary is designed to put together. There are other agencies that can do that far better than we can. I think over the course of time, we'll build a relationship with them from Kauai. Over time, I'm sure some people will go down there.
Yes. So this Monday, 5 o'clock, is that right?
4:30.
4:30 at Kauai Mini Golf.
Right. Tee off time is 5 o'clock. Yep.
And so we're never supposed to say the prices of things, but there's a donation amount.
There is a donation amount.
That's not unreasonable,
right,
for the tee off. And then music, any kind of thing like that there?
No music at the moment. It's a good idea. Maybe somebody wants to come and turn up and play from the arts.
Have a battle of the bands. There.
Have a battle of the bands. Thank you so much. That's a great idea. This was a sort of low-key event for Rotary, which sort of mushroomed. Once I mentioned the word Vanuatu, it seemed to explode. We do have some Vanuatans coming who will be speaking about their particular villages, their particular islands, and the impact that it's had on those islands. So, we're looking forward to a great event and then building a relationship with Port Vila over the course of time.
Well, that's wonderful. I thank you on that. And if people just want to make a donation to the Rotary earmarked for Vanuatu, what's the best way for them to do it?
They can send it. They can send it to our PO box, which is online if they want it. As you've been telling me, there will be a PayPal account set up this week to take donations as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We have some callers that have been holding. Aloha. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Felicia.
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to compliment you by making a comparison on families.
Okay.
With pets, and you made comment about the word responsibility, and especially how a youth, a kiki, can is associated. The word responsibility and having a pet. I mean, I'm an old man, so to speak, and part of my life is if I didn't have a pet, you know, I don't know what responsibility is. So all I'm doing is complimenting you, aside from the Rotarian with the Aussie accent.
I think he's an Englishman. Uh-huh.
He's an Englishman. Okay, that's close enough.
Close enough. Half a world away. It works for me. Yes. Go
on. It works for me too. So that's all I'm doing is calling to compliment. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. And you know, people have the service animals, and a lot of times people who have service animals have a real serious need, but almost any of us have a little need. And I remember I used to joke when I was in my 20s when I had my dog, Molly, and I would say, all these years I spent looking for unconditional love, and all I needed to do was get a dog, you know? Okay.
I have spent years, not only here on Kauai, but also on the mainland, working at the clinics and humane societies. So, you know, boom. When I heard that and I heard the word responsibility, I mean, it just clicked.
Well, thank you for calling.
You're welcome, Felicia. Have a beautiful night.
You too.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. You're on the air. Thank you so much for holding.
Hi, Felicia?
Yes?
So I'm listening to your radio show, and I'm confused on what the show is about.
Okay. That's fair, because we're jumping all over the place today. This is Kauai Soapbox, and so we're able to talk about a lot of things. What's confusing you? Let me help you.
This Englishman that's talking about helping Vanuatu?
Yes.
Is this show about our community here on Kauai or a community abroad?
Well, it's both. So what we're talking about on that is how our community here on Kauai has a lot of heart in giving towards another community that's going through something similar to what we did. So that's called empathy.
Okay,
and we
so
are empathizing.
Who are we helping? Are we helping our community on the radio show today? Because we have the same problems here, don't we?
Well, what I just brought up is that the Rotary has brought, I think, $805,000 last year. This is the North Shore Rotary. I know that the east side, it might be called the Kapa Rotary, they are doing the Taste of Kauai in June, mm-hmm. and that's a big event that they do that mostly goes to scholarships, college scholarships. I know the North Shore Rotary does college scholarships. And same with the South and I believe the West Side. So Rotary typically really builds here. And so this is a little bit of a step out for a local Rotary to help another place, but this was so important and everybody jumped on board. And I'll take some responsibility for overblowing up their plan because my empathy was there. Do you have trouble with that choice?
Yeah.
Okay, tell us.
Okay, so our community, as small as it is, we can use the efforts that we're using on the radio now to help out our cause or the common goal to help everyone on this island. Like, say, homeless here, people who are starving here. It's a big issue.
Yes, that's why we've spent so much time talking about it.
So you have an Englishman on the radio talking about Vanuatu or wherever he's going to go. And raise this money.
And he's talking about the food pantry. He spoke about the food pantry and helping the schools. He's a very dynamic individual who's helped many, many people here on Kauai.
So I'm confused on what you stand for on your radio show.
Well, I'm happy that you asked that. I stand for social justice. The main point of Kauai Soapbox is to allow people, like right now you're doing a very good job, of being able to express your viewpoint about something going on in the community, which happens in the moment to be about this show and what I'm choosing.
Okay, so what I'd really like to know, who do you really want to help? Your community that you currently live in, of Kauai, or abroad, say Vanuatu or wherever?
I want to help both, and the way I look at it is if we help Vanuatu, I'm very much one of the pay it forward, and I know how blessed and lucky Kauai was after Hurricane Iniki. The love that poured in from all the islands and well beyond our shores, I saw what a huge difference it made. I sit with great pride when we help Samoa with their tidal wave. You know, what we can do is just small, but what goes around comes around, and we live on one planet, and it's one ocean, and I consider them our cousins. So I am proud to give out love to the folks in Vanuatu who have had a hard time.
This is my point of view on the whole deal. If you live here in this community, use all of your efforts to help out this community first before branching out to another world, to Vanuatu or, you know, to Japan or somewhere like that. We can fix what we got here, right? If you lay here with your views, your love for everyone on the island, help us out first.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling and sharing that. I do my best. I got another caller. You have a last thought? Okay. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just on the side of the road because I to make a phone call to the show. It was funny. I was just driving, and I drove past Nell Raposo driving down the road, and he was on a phone talking while he was driving.
Uh-oh. Busted, Mel.
So anyway, Mel, if you're listening, make sure you drive safer. That's all I got to say.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. Mel, if you're listening, aloha and hi. And golly, when you're in the public eye, you are right in the public eye.
I actually see police officers doing that
all
a
the time.
Lot of times too.
All the time.
It's so ironic.
Yep. So that's interesting. Okay. Now, I have to, with the caller before last, in a little bit, I've been meaning to give a little shout out to Mauna Kea. And so, again, I feel like that's a global issue in a way. It's so much bigger than the mountain, and it's not that there's anything wrong with the telescope. It's just where they want to put the telescope, and we could argue, how important is it to see the very edges of the universe when so many people around the world are starving? I'm not saying yes or no to that, but I will acknowledge that. But since this is an art show, I wanted to speak to the art of the ahu making. And we have this Jonathan Jay and Donovan Kabibi. They recorded a little bit when they were up at Mauna Kea last weekend. We just had KKCR has had a number of people over there. And we care very much about social empowerment, and this is a little piece about what is happening on Oahu when they built the ahu. For those who don't know what an ahu is, it's like a stone. The shape is almost like a trapezoid. It is like an altar, but it's not a false god or something being built there. I've heard people say that. It is like basically creating a heiau or a sacred space to show something, and this is a little, just a very quick moment about doing that.
Almost 1,000 people, the UH, and they actually, in honor of the mountain, they built an ahu, an altar, on one of the lawns at UH Manoa, the University of Manoa.
Right.
There was a human chain almost over a mile long, passing the stones from one of the rivers.
Old
they
school.
Passed every single stone down this human chain all the way there, and they constructed the altar and they blessed it. And that is where now is a symbol of the mountain in Oahu.
Right.
And that is where they're gathered over 1,000.
And also, like, this process is supported not only by...
So, with that, when they did that altar with 1,000 people just moving stone to stone, even that in itself is a work of art and a work of collaboration. And something that I saw when I was up at Mauna Kea that just sort of really, really pierced me deeply was seeing a truck come up with these logs, and a line of people, volunteers, just all, you know, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 people or something like that, and just handing the logs hand to hand to hand to hand, and they were big, heavy logs, but when there's 5 or 6 people holding that log, it's really just not that hard. And as it was getting set down, instead of being set into a pile, it was being set into a hale. It was being constructed right as it was being set down. And it was in the dark. And there is this potential for collaboration that I think is just beautiful. And we've got another caller. I'm going to take the call. And I don't want to torture my friend here with the English accent from somewhere else. I want to talk about bringing the Rotary into the revolution. That is what I think is going to be like a really interesting dynamic. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey, I just want to make a brief comment about the cell phone thing. I know it's not the main focus of what you're talking about, but actually police officers are allowed to talk while they're driving. The law, that new law says so. They're exempted. And I think others like firemen or first responders, somebody else are allowed to do that too. And I'm thinking Mel must be thinking back to when he was a police officer himself and thinking that it's okay.
Might be. And, you know, I think it's important, like, I know that many of us can handle driving and talking or something like that, but if there's excessive speed, I sure hope that they're not doing that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, especially anyway. After we had that tragic accident a couple months ago with a speeding officer and a 19-year-old, and we haven't really heard what's come out of that, but I appreciate what you're saying. And
yeah, I was surprised by that, too, because I'd seen police officers talking on the cell phone all the time, and I was thinking,
yeah,
they're breaking the law, we can't. So I went and looked up the law, and I found out that they are allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So they're not breaking the law, and I'm not too worried about that, but it's just, I just wanted to just correct the record there for the people that are listening out there so they won't be mad when they see the cops talking on the phone.
Okay.
Thank you, Felicia. Thank you.
Thank you. So, all right. Rotarian.
Right, thank you.
All right.
We do a lot on the island as well, of course.
I know.
We do an enormous amount on the island as well.
I know that.
Just so we don't get this out of control.
I know that you do an enormous amount on the island. So, okay, I'm going to expose my ignorance, and I'm just going to be able to say what I think is my observation of the Rotary. It tends to be that it looks like it's mostly retired professionals or professional people. Is that fair?
I don't know that that's entirely fair at the moment. We've got on the North Shore here, I believe I've got 69 full members and something of the order of 18 additional members, so something around about 85. My sense, though I don't have a lot of demographic on it, my sense is that it's about 40% women now.
Okay.
We're getting a lot younger as well, a lot more younger people coming in and joining us. Certainly, there are a lot of retired individuals involved. There's no question about that. But sometimes they've got the time to put into giving back and doing work on the island because they don't have a full-time job all the time.
Well, yeah, and then you meet in the middle of the day. So that's sometimes that makes
That's the club up here. Other clubs meet at night or in the morning or whatever.
Okay, so, well, what I was going to say is like whenever I have gone to a Rotary meeting, it seems like a group of people who know what they're doing very well at creating a solution, particularly in what I would call understanding how to deal with the dominant culture. Like we have an indigenous culture over here. Yep. We have a dominant Western culture that's here, and we have, you know, a hybrid of that. And so sometimes, like, what I'm going to risk something, make somebody mad on my air listening, but I say every street does well to have, you know, a gnarly local guy with his pig hunting dogs and knows
Absolutely.
How to take care of a problem. Because
when
there's really an issue, who's going to save your life? Who's going to be able to solve any sort of problems? You want that person who is really, really rooted in understanding how to do the practical life things. And you need the bad guy with the briefcase, too, you know. So we need to be able to go and beat back all the paperwork that gets in the way. Like a lot of the issues that get in the way, like when we are talking about the starving artist or needing to have an art place, or how do we negotiate solutions to problems that or deal with paperwork. I think, I was sitting there, honestly, when I was at Mauna Kea, I was kind of smiling to myself, thinking, wouldn't it be nice if we got the Rotary up here?
Yep.
Because if a group of people who look like they wear button-down shirts, they're clean.
You should come to a Rotary meeting and see how unbuttoned-down we are sometimes.
Okay, okay.
It's pretty casual stuff.
Okay, but I was thinking, you know, then you've got, both sides of the thing there, and it really might help the whole negotiation. I don't even just mean Mauna Kea. I mean, no. I mean all of it. Like, how do we not get pushed out into the margins? That's really the piece, the tension, I feel like, is that we are becoming a service economy to the point where there's no dignity left. It's almost like indentured servitude, and people in the margins of their lives is where they find their most enrichment, whether it's the arts or the ocean or whatever it is, where when I, at an earlier time here, that was what their life was about. It wasn't about serving and living in slumlord conditions, because that's the only thing that's available for people to rent that actually...
Well, you know, we live in a one of the most beautiful places, and it's such a desirable place to be. And I think a lot of people that come here, you know, what was I hearing? There's like a 25% housing shortage, you know, and I think a lot of people come to the island. They want to work. They want to live here. And, you know, I think the people that have the most money can do it easily, but at the same time, you know, the people that can't do it as well, you know, they can kind of get squeezed out.
They're getting squeezed out.
Yeah. Like you, Kat. Like me. My rent went way up.
You know, there are different living arrangements for families and individuals as well that we could move towards. There's something called intentional communities, where people actually get together and live residentially for a particular reason and in a particular way. And there are some zoning issues that we need to look at to make this sort of thing possible here on the islands. But it could be done.
Yeah, I think, you know, that needs to be looked into. And I've spoken to some people about that before, and they might not really understand it. I think the ethnic groups that have extended families here, they are able to live in natural communities of their big extended families, or even in unintentional communities, because we're all right together and there's such a long legacy together. And I was talking to somebody yesterday. We got in this conversation about the Howley word, which is something I don't like that well. But what I was saying is, you know, when you look at a group of people who have been displaced and displaced and displaced for, you know, 100 years, actually, just pushed and pushed and pushed, it breaks up the connection to the land. It breaks up the family. Have compassion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really, intentional communities, particularly among the young people, is a way of trying to recreate what has been taken from them in the intentional corporate moves of their parents. There was actually a big intention that was put out in the corporations where they were moving people. It wasn't an accident. It was actually by design. And it did break up the homes. And it did, when they started building the little yards and stuff with the cinder block walls in between and ways of separating people, it's actually a very big loss. And it's something that needs to be healed. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Yeah, I had a question for you.
Could you turn your radio off, please?
Well, yeah, we'll turn it down for a second. So whose responsibility is it to, you know, research if there's jobs or there's housing on a certain island before you move here? Is it the person who's moving here? Is it our fault now that they're here on the island and they don't have a job and they're starving and they don't have a place to stay?
I think that's an easy one to answer. I think that it is the responsibility of the person who moves over here, without a doubt, right? If somebody's going to be coming over here and they don't expect to struggle, you know, it's hard to have a lot of sympathy if they don't make an effort to figure that out before they come. I'm going to have somebody who has a comment on that here, but I think that where the challenge is for people who have either been born here or have lived here for quite a good long time, and the economy has changed and shifted so much that then that problem comes where, you know, people don't have a place to be able to adapt to it.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in and say I actually know somebody who works for the county that deals with people who show up here and expect, you know, housing or whatever. And there was this one woman that was coming here from New York and had spoken with the county, and they said, no, there's no housing. If you don't have a job and you don't have money, don't come here. Mm-hmm. And she bought a ticket with all of her money and showed up at the county building with her suitcases and was like, okay, give me a place to stay. And it's just ridiculous.
And different communities, even, they will take their homeless and give them a ticket to Hawaii. And I am a chronic hitchhiker picker-upper, and I have picked up people before who've been given a ticket in Honolulu and sent. And the person I picked up was told to go to Anahola Beach Park. So you're right, caller, that happens, and I would say it is the responsibility of the person who is placing themselves here, absolutely. Do you see it the same way or differently?
Well, I see it the same way. Now, you're talking about the local people or some people who have lived here a long, good time. They're getting displaced because the times are changing. Now, what is attributing to that change?
The global economy.
People moving here?
It's the global economy.
Now, does that affect Hawaii on a large scale?
Yes, it does.
The global economy.
It does. I do personally believe that it does. We are having...
Now, what part of it, of the island, does it affect? Does it affect taro farming? Does it affect the farmer up in Anahola? Does it affect the person that's been living in their house?
Well, I think the more stability you have, the better off you are. But I do think that, like, there are areas that seem like are willing collateral damage. I would say Poipu or the North Shore is an area that seems to be being allowed for that to happen more strongly. But it affects our whole island.
So you're saying that we're displacing the locals, where we're developing hotels and we're developing new shops and things like that?
Well, it's more profound than that. I would say, like, shops and hotels are going to actually create jobs.
But is that housing the local person that only has a skill set that knows how to, let's say, build talent?
No, I don't think it houses them.
Okay, so what's the solution to that problem?
Well, it's not a very easy solution. I think it really takes a very, very strong look at our tax structure, our real property tax structure. And right now it's all set on what's called ad valorem taxing, which means at the value that the land it can be sold at or is evaluated at. And so...
So can we go a little simpler?
Okay.
Is there a simpler answer than where I'm going to look up tax?
Well, if you know one, I want to hear it. But it is not an easy answer because it's such a beautiful place and all kinds of people want to be here. And we invite people here and they come and they stay. I'm
so
one of them.
Have you ever heard or have you ever seen somewhere, like, say, the coastline of California, where they don't allow people to move there anymore because it's so saturated?
A moratorium. There are areas that they do a moratorium, and that's pretty complex because when you do put a moratorium on, it drives the prices of the existing real estate up very, very high.
So and what if the answer was the people who currently live here and have lived here for a long, good time don't care about that? We just want it to go stay the way it is. You know, we don't want any more. If we put a moratorium on it, then there would be no more traffic, right? Additional traffic onto it.
One of the things they're doing in Honolulu is doing rent control. You know, I think that might be something where, you know, it's not squeezing people out of their homes so quickly because there's such a demand for homes. Maybe having, you know, staying consistent with prices for rentals.
From what I'm hearing on your show, where do you think the island is going? Where is it moving to if we keep displacing the local people?
I think what it's going to is being something like Lanai, that there is a playground for the rich. It is an environment for large industrial agriculture. It is and workers in something like workforce housing. I think if we don't shift what we're doing, and it doesn't even matter if you were born here for generations, because when you're born here for generations, still yet, there's more kids, and how do those kids buy a house and find a house? You know, not everybody can still live with grandma. Not everybody. So it affects people whether they are lived here for 2 years or 20 years or 200 years or whatever. It is, it will push everybody if we're not careful.
Wow. So in your opinion or your view, how long do you think that'll take? From, you know, let's say this is year one. How long do you think it will take until it becomes a lanai, a playground for the rich?
Well, you know,
Or is it happening now?
I think it's happening now, but I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are trying to stem that tide. I'm just looking at the trend that's there, and I do my best to help what can happen.
So at your best ability, what do you think the local point of view is?
Well, why don't you tell me? Because I think that you have one. So I think that's what you would like to do. And I've got other callers holding, so I want to hear what your position is.
Well, my position is, I'm sure you caught the gist of it. You know, don't let people move here. We want to keep it the same. You know, that the same old thing that all local people talk about, right? I'm asking, what was your point of view?
Well, I think that would be great, but I don't think it would work. I don't think that you can just shut the door and that all of a sudden the price, if you do that, if you put a moratorium on, as soon as you create a shortage of what's in demand, the price is going to go up. And so property values will go up, and what happens is people sell their house. Maybe they bought it for $30,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 and all of a sudden it's worth $3 million. Most people can't resist that temptation and they sell. And I see that happen all the time.
And if you have people who want to stay here and work, all of a sudden their income, they need to make more money. Mm-hmm. So job people who have businesses, small businesses, have to pay their employees. So all of a sudden you see how it has a holistic effect where everything starts getting bumped up.
It's like the starving artist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the starving artist is starving why?
Why?
The starving artist won't sell his art for $100. Or because the starving artist chose that path in life.
Well, so he's bringing up something really, really super valid.
Actually, I have a comment to say about that.
Okay.
You know, when you work here and live here and make something, say you make, you know, a product, you do a painting, or you do, you know, you have to ship your goods over, you have to get your equipment, you have to buy your brushes. In my case, it's glass equipment, and what happens is we have a very, you know, we have a world, our borders are open. You know, we have people in other countries who don't have to make as much money to survive. And those imports come in. And a lot of people that live in places where it costs a lot to live, they can't compete with third world countries that where their products are made a lot cheaper.
So if you're starving and you had a painting you made that you valued in your head, $30,000, and you were starving, would you sell it to me for $10?
Believe me, I just had a garage sale, and I had things going for $5.
And caller, I'm going to have to take another call soon, but what I think that maybe you might be looking at, I'm not sure it's clear to me that you are, is that, yes, that person could not be an artist, and typically they also clean condos or something for a living. They have a straight job along with being an artist is very typical. But what the question it begs is, the more hot is the economy, the less you are able to choose your own passion for what you want to do. Maybe there's very narrow things that you can do, like you can work for companies that have policies that you're not comfortable with. You start to tolerate things that you don't like. And certainly Hawaii and Kauai has been that way. And in the time of the plantation, people worked all week long really hard. They get paid. And please, you might know more about plantation time than me. Maybe you have an ancestor that was in that. But they get their paycheck, and it goes to the company store. And it basically, it's not much more than being an indentured servant. And we want freedom, not indentured servitude. And that's what we're arguing for. Donya has something to say, and then I got to take the next call.
Really quickly, just to address what you were saying about if the artist
thinks their art is worth $30,000, and if they're starving, would they sell it for $10? I think the point Kat started making but didn't finish making explicitly is that so many people don't realize, aside from the amount of time that it takes to make a piece of art, the equipment and the supplies are very expensive. And so, like she said, having to ship them in, like you see this canvas and you're like, well, why don't you just give it to me or sell it for $10? Well, just the actual canvas could have cost that artist $50. And
oh,
then the
gotta
paint
make cheaper art.
Right. But the point is the supplies are not cheap. So what are you making it out of?
Right. So
you can go and pound some tapa like the ancient Hawaiians did.
Thank you, caller. And I'm gonna take the next call, but I appreciate your frustration and your comments. Aloha, you're on the air, you'll be our last caller.
Hey, aloha.
Aloha.
Yeah, for art is added, first of all. But in any case, yeah, I call about the housing thing. But as far as the Ahu, I'm not sure about the one over on the Big Island, Mauna Kea, but Ahu, the first one we built here, the Hawaiian Nation, Kalapaki, it's a, and there's several around now, are markers for, you know, land claims for, you know, yeah, just for land claim.
Yes.
You know, like the Muslims put up their mosque and they claim the land. But in any case, I'm calling about the housing.
Okay, real quick, because we're almost at the end of the show.
Okay, yeah. Well, like 15 years ago, I had a three-bedroom house for on a nice corner lot for $900. And that's when it started, the rent started going up when the vacation rentals came to be a big issue. And everybody was renting out all their spare rooms for vacation rentals and renting out their houses for vacation rentals. That's when the long-term rentals all died.
That's right. But getting rid of vacation rentals won't necessarily solve that problem because...
No, I'm just saying that's when it started. But, that's when it started.
It's when
the big thing that, you know, should be looked at. And the regulations, I find right now, I'm fixing to be houseless, not homeless. The North Shore has been my home for going on 30 years. Yeah, so I might be fixing to be houseless here soon. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the community association rules. That's my thing. I got a lot of friends, and they're, you know, like Kalihiwai and several places. The community association, Guavakai, the community association rules prevent them from letting me park my van and plug in or, you know, set up a tent for storage.
Right. And we have that all over the place, and it becomes almost criminal to lay your head down anywhere. There's actually a law against sleeping in your car.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
and exactly. you can't put up a tent on your own land. There is gotten very, very difficult. So sometimes laws against things don't work that well.
There should be an exception for like the community, the county park, beach parks. There should be an exception for Kama'aina, long time Kama'aina, to be able to stay there longer than 60 days a year, whatever, you know?
Right, and at least on this island there is that 60 days, because other places there aren't. But this is a longer discussion. Thank you for calling in. It's
been
a very important topic, and thank you for seconding that strident need. Aloha. So Jazz with John is up next. Somebody wanted to know my definition of indigenous. People who are from that piece of land. So in Hawaii, indigenous would be people who, you know, have been here for millennium or whatever. Person in Sicily who's from Sicily, that would be indigenous to that area. It's not a color of skin. It's how long your roots are to the area that's there. And Englishmen can be indigenous to England. So I want to say aloha to all of you, and we'll hear the county council report, and Jazz with John is coming up next. Say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye,
everybody.
Aloha. Thank you.
Thanks, Felicia.
Aloha, Felicia.
Okay, thank you so much. And we will hear on the county council report that, in fact, homestays are on the agenda tomorrow.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of April 20th. There will be a regular council meeting Wednesday at 8:45 a.m. in the council chambers in the historic county building in Lihue. Here's some highlights from the agenda.
Council will interview candidates for the Fire and Police Commissions and the Board of Ethics. The mayor also forwarded candidates for these positions and the Civil Service Commission, and they are under resolutions. The Director of Planning transmitted the Planning Commission's recommendation to amend the county code to identify an enforceable homestay definition and processing parameters under which homestay operations can be permitted with a use permit. This is proposed draft bill number 2587. The prosecuting attorney requests council approval to spend $162,529 in federal highway safety funds from the State of Hawaii Department of Transportation to be used towards continuing the funding of one full-time equivalent special prosecuting attorney for travel and training. Also, the prosecuting attorney requests approval to spend grant funding.